My name is John Russell. I'm the Director of Academic Systems at the Naval Postgraduate School. This is Nam Nguyen. He's our lead learning systems specialist, I guess. What's your title this week?
Learning systems lead.
So we're here to talk about, actually two projects that we took Sakai and LifeRay and tried to integrate the two of them. One is a more traditional approach, and one is sort of out of the box. And I don't know if you guys are going to find it useful, but we'll show you what we did, and you guys make judgment for yourself. So originally, this was the question that we were trying to answer, because that's very much what we were trying to do. We were tasked to build a learning collaboration portal that had no mandatory involvement whatsoever. It was strictly voluntary on all levels. No credit, no nothing, just, you know, it was a portal for folks to come if they wanted to, and we tried to make it as useful as possible. So before we get into how we did that, I have to do the customary, this is NPS slide, so bear with me, I'll make it brief. So Naval Postgraduate School is not located in Annapolis, Maryland. That's the Naval Academy. We're not located in Newport, Rhode Island. That's the Naval War College. And we don't teach language. That's DLI, that's the Army School. We're the Naval Postgraduate School. We're located in Monterey, California, just about 5 hours up the road. We have an enrollment of about 2,800 students, split roughly between resident and DL. What people don't realize about us is we have between 40 and 60 countries represented at any one given time. Those are foreign military officers, usually lieutenant, colonel level, that come to our school to get a graduate degree in mostly engineering, business, international studies. We do about $200 million of research work every year for a faculty size of right around 500 faculty members. So it's we're a small school, but we do quite a lot of research. The schools in engineering and applied sciences, information and operations, business, and then the international school. And some of our more famous alumni are the current chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mike Mullen, the director of the NSA, and now the new director of the U.S. Joint Cyber Command, General Alexander. And a third of the U.S. astronaut fleet has gone through NPS and got a degree with us. So our agenda today is to give you a little project background, then go through the Sakai and LifeRay tool sets and how they compare. What we ended up doing on our first integration, which was the non-portlet version, and then our second integration, which is still in beta, which is the more traditional portlet that you guys are probably more familiar with, and then hopefully leave some time for Q&A at the end. So just real quick, can I get a hands of who's using Sakai right now? Okay, roughly half. And how many folks are using LifeRay? 12, 3. Okay. Well, that's actually good for me, because what I wanted to do was try and I don't want to have you guys walk away disappointed, so I stole this from the internet like most good presenters just do. This isn't going to be a code walkthrough. This is going to be how we built the portlet. We're going to try and keep this a little bit higher level. You know, we can answer those questions if you want, but I didn't want to bore you guys with a bunch of code. So what we were trying to do was build FeoWeb. So what's FeoWeb? Well, let's start with what a FeO is. FeO stands for Foreign Area Officer. They're 03 to 06 level, which is a major to a colonel or a lieutenant to a captain in the Navy. So that roughly means they're, you know, between 30 and 55, depending on where they are in their career. They all have master's degrees, mostly in international politics or diplomacy or something like that. They also have spent usually at least 2 years at DLI picking up at least two other foreign languages. They're widely considered to be the cultural and regional experts for the military in their particular area. And there's roughly 3,000 of them worldwide. So obviously the military spends a lot of time educating these folks and a lot of money in doing so. So what does a FeO look like? Well, if you ever look on CNN, and I'm trying to point, see the guy behind Admiral Mullen? that's usually the FAO. It's the guy standing next to you, the president or the vice president or the chairman of the Joint Chiefs or whatever, or Secretary Clinton, whoever it is, telling them this is whose hand you shake, this is, you know, who you bow to, this is whatever. Well, you're not supposed to bow to anybody, but never mind. But that's who they are, basically. They're so the problem that we're trying to solve is that the FAO community, there was no real joint communication between the branches of service. So what I like to the example that was always given to me was that an Army FAO could be stationed in Beijing and a Navy FAO could be stationed in Hong Kong, and they could spend their entire careers and never know the other one existed. It's kind of sad, but true. So we wanted to professionalize the community the same way that special operations, whether a Navy SEAL or on the Delta Force or a Ranger or whatever, they all go through similar training, and we wanted the same thing with FAOs. Turnover is quite a problem in that, you know, usually don't get to meet the person you're replacing. So a lot of institutional knowledge walks out the door before you get to your desk in, you know, Bangladesh or wherever you're stationed. Maintaining skill sets, again, the Army, the Navy, Air Force, Marines, they spend a lot of money training these guys, and then as soon as they leave DLI, they're shipped out and spend 6-7 years in country, and we don't give them a way to keep their, you know, their skills up to date, both in language and in other, you know, international diplomacy and skills like that. Career advancement is an issue, and that, again, that goes to skill sustainment, that the FAO discipline in the military is largely seen as sort of a dead-end job, where, you know, once you're a FAO, that's where you're going to be for life, and they kind of wanted to change that. And then there's the other things that, you know, where do your kids go to school? You know, when you go to Beijing, you're stationed there, you know, how do you find out? And the only way to really get that sort of on-the-ground knowledge is by talking to other FAOs. And then there's certain things like if you're a FAO in India, you've got to know the rules of cricket because it's part of the lexicon. You know, what's a sticky wicket? What does that mean? So our solution to that was to build FAO Web, which was going to be a collaboration portal, have online course and training, online repository, a roster of everyone that's a FAO, where they're stationed, what their phone number is, what their email address is, and a single point of entry. So the military in general has this habit of creating these pockets of applications all over the place, each with their own username and password, and they're hard to find, and so we wanted to centralize that all into one spot. So our concerns in building this were basically, you know, how big it was going to get. So there's 3,000 FAOs, there's 1,000 FAOs in the pipeline, there's 1,000 retired FAOs, there's the educational communities, and there's also a mirrored civilian program called CIVFAS, or Civilian Foreign Area Specialists, which basically do the same thing. These are the guys that staff the embassies. There was talk of this community growing to 10,000, 15,000. So we wanted to take that into consideration. The other things, again, as I said before, it was a strictly voluntary thing. You know, the FAOs weren't made to use this system. There was no credit for anything, and that was done on purpose because tests in the military are very big things. And if you fail a test or you fail a course, it may be held against you when you're up for your next promotion. So the only way to make sure that these folks went into the system was, you know, strictly voluntary. We're not going to grade anything. It's just there for your use. Security, obviously, you know, if you list all the FAOs worldwide, that's something the foreign governments may want. And then flexibility in that, these were all linguists. There's 3,000 of them. They're telling us they want this web portal to do these certain things, but they couldn't express it in technical terms because that's not their specialty. So we knew that we were going to miss the mark really early on. So the key was to build something that could change rather quickly. So design principles, you know, we wanted to make sure it was open source, and that goes to scalability. Customizable, that also goes to our ability to, you know, miss the mark and change it. We wanted to leverage the existing infrastructure we had, create a sense of community. This stuff really speaks for itself. But the one thing that was more important than anything is that we wanted it to be one system. All through their career, they've been, you know, have these new systems shoved down their throat every 6 months. So we wanted one place where they could use all of their old stuff and all of their new stuff and have it delivered to them. And finally, everyone has access to everything. The Navy guys can go to the Army discussion boards and vice versa. And really, it was a playground to promote joint communication. So why we decided on Sakai? Well, it was open source. It's a great solution for distance learning, delivering training. But most importantly, we were already using it at MPS. So to extend it beyond what we're currently using it for was fairly easy. Where Sakai fell short, why didn't we build a whole thing in Sakai? Well, I'm reluctantly putting the slide up because it's a terrible metaphor and it's overused. But Sakai is basically a series of silos. It's a course site and a project site, and your homepage or my site, my workspace rather, and there's very little overarching community in Sakai. It's not meant to be. It's not meant to be a portal. For training Arabic, Sakai works great. But for creating a 3,000-person discussion board, it kind of gets a little bit funky. So Sakai 3, for those of you guys familiar with Sakai 3, does answer some of this. It allows for, tools to be shared among different sites and more of a sense of community, more overarching community feel to it. But when we were building this back in December 2009, it wasn't ready for prime time. I think even with Sakai 3 and where it's going, there's still a space for a true portal technology in front of Sakai. That's my personal opinion. But what we've found is when you're adding things outside of learning content, outside of coursework, training work, there is a need to bring those things in together into a single instance, or single website, if you will. So we needed a front end for this system, and so the two open source ones that everyone's using, again, are LifeRay and UPortal. I wish I could tell you we had this long drawn out evaluation of the two between the pluses and minuses of LifeRay and UPortal. Truth be told, we were sort of familiar with both. We had been looking at both for the past couple of years for an enterprise portal of our own at NPS, and it came down to we thought we'd get LifeRay up quicker. As simple as that. We were against a deadline. Both are great products. Both have their pluses and minuses. I could go into detail if you wanted, but we picked LifeRay because we thought we could get it up faster. There was a lot more professional services around it. There was a lot more... it was just better supported. So getting back, a definition of portlet. Like, you guys need a definition of a portlet. But going back to why we didn't go with a portlet approach for this particular tool, in that we wanted one, we were building a system from scratch, and so we wanted one system to basically create a feel of a single all-encompassing web presence. And we knew that a portlet is a pass-through from one system to another, and it would make it feel like we were kludging together two or three different things for the user. So we decided to go a different route. We wanted to make a system that basically the user couldn't tell where you pass from one system to another one and go back and forth without relogging in or doing other things. So we knew a portlet wasn't going to work. So the approach we took was we wanted, we knew that basically all of these functions were basically the main functionality of the portal that we wanted to encompass in this Theia web. And so we knew we didn't want to double up on the tools. So, we didn't want a discussion board in LifeRay and a different discussion board in Sakai because they'd look and feel differently. So we had to separate them, and we sort of took a dual approach. On one side, we looked at the actual functionality. Who had the better discussion board? Was it Sakai or was it LifeRay? And then the other is, what was the audience? Is it for the overall community? Is it for a specific course? In splitting them up, this is basically how we did it. The announcements, discussion boards, calendar, search, the roster, or profile tool, basically a listing of who's in the session. The RSS reader, chat, and a document repository all live on the LifeRay side. So we're using those for that those functions. On the Sakai side, the wiki document repository, the web portlet tool, which is in what are they called in Sakai? The web services tool, lessons, and then an evaluations tool. And then for the stuff in the middle, for single sign-on, we're using CAS. For video chat, which is sort of an odd thing, we're using Illuminate Live. And for our video server, we're using Flash Media Portal. So that's basically the what runs FeiaWeb. So how did we do this? Well, customizations to Sakai. First of all, we hid my workspace. So for those of you familiar with Sakai, when you log in, you land on this site called My Workspace, which is basically your personal homepage. We didn't have a need for that, so we hid it and basically navigated users around it. We also hid My Courses. So as I said before, everyone has access to everything, and that includes My Courses, so you don't have a list of the courses available. With that, enrollments are handled a lot differently, and the skins are handled a lot differently. We hacked the existing Sakai skin to do what we wanted to, and we'll get into that and show you it in a second. And then we used liberal use of the anonymous user role, which is not a very common user type in Sakai. Basically, it allows you to, you know, if you enable anonymous user, it allows you to go in there and do whatever you want in a course anonymously. Again, going back to the whole credit for students, it's sort of different, but that's what we had to do. And then finally, because we were using the anonymous role, we had to change the way the evaluation tool worked because, you know, we wanted to be able to... The carrot we used to get folks to take courses was that after they took a course, they got to fill out an evaluation of that course. They get at least a 300-word contextual evaluation of the content of that course. Was it useful? What does your experience, you know, say? Do you agree or disagree? That kind of thing. And then as a reward or as a carrot, you know, to do that, you got to view all of the other people that had done a contextual evaluation of that. So say, for instance, if you're taking a course on the Chinese space race and you went through and you said, okay, you know, and my contact in Beijing says X, Y, and Z, and then you'd be able to go in there and read what other folks have said about that same course, whether it was valuable, whether it was not. And then with that, your name is associated with that, so people can contact each other after the fact. So getting back to the technical side, the LifeRay side of the house, we used... CAS, so we integrated LifeRay with CAS. We changed some of the password reset functionality, so basically you could reset your password through LifeRay, which was fairly complex. We seemed to pull it off. We disabled the private site, so in LifeRay you can have your own customized portlet. So you can go in there and create your own page and move your widgets around and do whatever you want with them. Because of the I hesitate to say age, but I'll say it. The age of our user base, we thought that would be confusing, so we shut that off so everyone gets the standard, you know, look and feel. And then finally, the one thing that we're working on right now that we haven't done is expand the profile section. So the profile is, you know, name, email, phone number. We're greatly expanding it to include the languages the folks speak, where they're deployed, what previous deployments they've had, and so on and so forth. So far as the family information, so spouses and children can get in contact, because it is a fairly lonely life. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Nam to do a quick demo of FeiaWeb. And while he's coming up here, I'm going to change the view real quick.
Okay, so this is our the front end to the FeiaWeb portal. This is the public page, and more or less just gives you an overview whether you're just coming across it or if you're a FAO just trying to get more information on the portal itself. Once you log in, you have the various tools that, as John specified, we use for FAO Web or LifeRay. Like we have the calendar, the document repository, for discussion forums, and the wiki. And then we also have a community set up by branch and and region, and then this is LifeRay, and then the integration with Sakai, all the learning modules and languages are built in Sakai, as we found it easier to use Sakai for that. So loading. Looks like our internet may have died.
So you think so?
Yeah, connected.
All right, technical difficulties.
Let's shut off the wireless.
Now try it.
All right, so these are some of the modules that we built in Sakai. Again, we just sent them all to Anonymous and just hard linked into them. So if we go into them, this is one of the modules. Again, it has the tool menu at the top is similar, so it's kind of a
Why don't you go to the other one, the language ones?
Language one? All right.
So the idea here is if you saw it, but go back real quick. So as we go from, this is LifeRay, and go ahead and click across, and that's Sakai. So the idea here is that we've taken the two skins, really, and combined them as much as possible. So what that basically does is we're taking the Sakai links and hard linking them back to LifeRay, if you will, and then doing some things in the back end to make it all seamless. So go ahead and show the LSK just real quick and see if it will pop up. So these are just the standalone applications that do these are language type.
Apa kaliber dan jenis senjata itu? Apa kaliber dan jenis senjata?
For these guys. So, for FAO, it's not enough to speak a language. You have to speak weapons and aircraft control and shoulder-fired missiles and things like that. That's basically the integration, was trying to create trying to take the best of both worlds and merge them together as in a seamless way as possible. Now, can you go back to the other modules? So with these modules, again, this is Sakai, and this is sort of taking, this is what a really good web designer can do with Sakai with, about a month's worth of work. The idea here is, up on the top, the links are all hard linked again, the same, but we knew that if we wanted the users to come back and take these courses, we had to make them fairly interactive and make them visually appealing. So if you go ahead and click on one of the Camtasia videos. So all of these presentations are, these are all done in Camtasia, but highly video-oriented, lots of graphics, lots of...
Competitive context in Asia is a very important issue that is not getting enough attention. We see occasional splashes of news with...
Most of these courses are 5-6 hours long, so no one's going to take them in one stretch. So with that, why don't we head back to the presentation and So in terms of, I promised you guys lessons learned. So again, this is the first integration. I'll show you the second one in a second. So lessons learned, as far as behavior is concerned, for a voluntary web portal, it's important to seed a lot of content. And I'll get back to that point in a minute. Don't subdivide your audience too much. So there was a tendency that everyone, you know, FAO is basically split on three axes, you know, the branch of service, the region of expertise, and the type of FAO you are. You're a diplomat or you're an intelligence officer or whatever. And so there was a push really to subdivide all these guys in their own little communities. And what we ended up doing was having communities of 5 to 10 people, and there's no real, you know, it's hard to run a discussion board with 5 people. So, you know, to get the global intelligence, you have to really not subdivide the people as much as, or your audience as much as you probably would like. Wikis require an incredible amount of critical mass. 3,000 folks weren't enough. We seeded it like crazy, and maybe it was the age, maybe it was the busy, maybe folks that don't know how to use a wiki, or linguists don't know how to use a wiki. But the wiki is fairly unused, except for my staff putting stuff up there. The videos, however, are extremely popular. We put briefs up, NPS professors, DLI professors, folks from the State Department, or you know, regional experts giving, you know, half an hour, you know, 20-minute podcasts, if you will. They're not podcasts, but you know, bite-sized chunks. They love those. But what it comes down to is that as much as we hear about the Web 2.0 versus Web 1.0, you know, the contributor versus the consumer, in this particular group, in this particular age bracket, they still very much are consumers. They participate, you know, in discussion, but 10 to 20% of them participate in the discussion boards. The rest are lurkers, we know, because we can, you know, we read the logs. But they're, a lot of the feedback we got when we first launched this is, you know, I logged on and there's nothing there. Yeah, it's a big pot where you're supposed to put stuff into, and they didn't really get that most of the content was going to come from the community. So we've had to do a lot of seeding of content to sort of get things off the ground, and we're starting to turn a corner, but it was sort of rough going for the first 6 months trying to get content in there. As far as technology, the military is full of acronyms, and this is one of my favorite, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. It's really true. You know, we err on the side of adding too many tools. We should have stuck with 2 or 3 simple ones. If it requires a download, they're not going to use it just because they want everything web-enabled. CAS was hugely beneficial to us. It was a little bit tricky to get started at the beginning and configured the right way, but once we got it working, it's incredibly powerful tool. For those of you guys who don't know CAS, Central Authentication System, it's basically a single sign-on tool, open source single sign-on tool from JSIG. Wonderful. Sakai Web Tools, they're still very much a work in progress. We built the original portlet on 2.6, well, I'll get to the portlet in a second, but we built the original one on 2.6. 2.7 it gets better, 3.0 is supposedly gets a lot better. But if you're on 2.5 or 2.6 and you're thinking about building a Sakai portlet, I would highly suggest that you upgrade Sakai first before you do that. Sakai, as you saw on the demo of the web modules or the learning modules, it's very, very, very flexible. It can do pretty much, it'll do backflips if you want it to. You just have to spend the time to actually make it do that. And LifeRay, we're very happy with it. It's, you know, a very capable portal system. In fact, we are launching it on our enterprise as well. If you guys are a small school like us and don't have a lot of resources, third-party vendors are well worth the money. We used RSmart for Sakai integration, and we use Unicon for our LifeRay integration. I recommend both companies very, very, very highly. They're not paying me to say that, but we were very pleased with both of those companies. And now I promise you Sorry, I have one more slide. Next steps, as I told you, we're launching a traditional portlet, which I will is in beta. So I will show you what we it's going to look like. So this is our. Oops.
You gotta go
I logged out.
You got to go up to the upper right.
What's that?
Upper right. Yeah.
I got logged out. What is with this internet connection? I'm signed in.
Okay, so now.
Student. So, this is the portlet, the Sakai portlet that we're currently working on. That's a more traditional portlet that, you know, you folks, you know, probably are more used to seeing. Basically, what we're doing is, it's a chronological listing of the latest updates in all of the courses or project sites that I'm enrolled in across five tools, six tools, so announcements, discussions, assignments, messages, and tests and quizzes. On the left, you can scroll down and sort by or filter, rather, by the courses that you're enrolled in. You can also go across the top and filter by, you know, announcements or discussions or assignments. I don't have any assignments, tests and quizzes. And then if you click on any of these, it'll bring you directly into that spot in your learning management system. So that's the more traditional portlet view that we're, I would say is, I won't even say 80% done, yeah. I would say. There's still a, it's still rough around the edges. There's still some things that we have to fix. But again, this is pretty much LifeRay, CAS, and Sakai, and some Java programming, but not a whole lot. So with that, that is the end of our formal presentation. I'm happy to take questions. No questions. Okay. Well, I won't waste any more time. So enjoy the bar. If you have any other questions, you know, feel free to come up. I'll have my cards up here, and well, you can, you know, ask specific questions that may pertain just to you. So, thank you very much.